Our next guest was a writer on Late Night with David Letterman for nearly 1,000 episodes over 7 years, starting in 1984. He shared in 3 Primetime Emmy Awards for outstanding writing for his work on the show. Perhaps his biggest contribution was the invention of Letterman's famous feature, the Top 10 List. Letterman told the origin story to Regis Philbin in 2012.
I'll tell you this.
It came to us many years ago on the old NBC show. A guy named Randy Cohen, I believe, was the writer who proposed that one night we do a top 10 list or a top 5 list. And it was a cheap, easy way to refill a category and get some laughs most nights. So it was the doing of Randy Cohen, who later had quite a run he was the ethicist in the New York Times Magazine.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's the origin of it. And
but is it a chore to come up with those?
Not for me. I'm not even in the building. I'm at home having a facial.
Wow.
Randy Cohen was the ethicist for the New York Times for 12 years and is the host and creator of Person, Place, Thing, heard right here on WAMC. It's a great pleasure to welcome Randy Cohen back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me. I should tell you, that Dave's story is deeply gratifying at my house, but not entirely true. Memory is a very fuzzy thing, and I remember this very differently. Steve O'Donnell, who was the head writer the whole time I was there, believes in his heart of hearts that he came up with this idea. But Steve remembers it very differently, and we'll never know. We'll never know.
But again, if David Letterman's going on television and telling the story, ride with it, right? Ride it?
Absolutely. If it's said on television, it's true.
Monkey cam, that is you?
Monkey cam is me, unambiguously me, yeah. And the idea was, it's putting a camera on a monkey. That's it. But and the other kind of parallel idea is to make a big fuss about a small thing. So this innovation was touted as if it were the greatest thing ever. This was akin to heart transplants. So at least that's how it started. It meant those two things.
All right, I guess this is it. Let me give you a second here to call the neighbors and wake the kids because, folks, it's broadcasting history. Paul, get ready. Ladies and gentlemen, Zippy and the late night monkey cam. Zippy, come on out here, buddy.
As it got rolling, it seemed to mean other things. Which is what I think made working at the show great, that it meant the monkey was just allowed to run loose. It was a chimp. We tried it with a monkey, with a rhesus monkey, and it couldn't carry the batteries. It was, what's the opposite of scamper? It tried to get up the rope, and it was falling backwards. The primitive, I can't work with a monkey like that. And we had to get me a bigger monkey. This animal was allowed to just run loose in the studio, unencumbered. It was slightly dangerous, and it was really distracting.
Nice to see you, Zippy. Thank you. Thank you so much. This really is a technical miracle, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen?
And so the show, it became a piece about Dave's willingness to function amidst chaos. It was really, really impressive. The other thing it seemed to mean as the show goes on is it became a piece about the vanity of all talk show guests. I remember the lead guest was Dr. Ruth, and she did not like being upstaged by a monkey. The monkey was, first of all, it was about her height. And it was dressed better than she was. So you can't blame her for being mad. She's trying to sell whatever she's trying to sell. And this extremely charming chimpanzee keeps sort of walking over to Dave's desk and picking up his mug or climbing the rope. And Dr. Ruth uttered, in the midst of this, a sentence that I think sums up every talk show guest on every talk show, which is, don't look at the monkey, Dave. Look at me.
Hey, how you doing, by the way?
I'm doing very well, but let's find out what he wants.
Well, you just have to treat him as if he's a piece of equipment here, because...
You can't do that.
No, he's just like any other cameraman, and he's performing an experiment for us tonight. just play along and nobody gets hurt.
All right.
Now, Ruth, the last time you were here, I guess we hadn't...
You said... that you have to treat it like a piece of equipment, so look at me, talk to me.
I'm a little concerned about
it. Don't look at the monkey, Dave, look at me. I want that like on my tombstone. It was so wonderful. But by halfway through the show, it had really worn out its welcome. I mean, we'd done pretty much everything there was to do with it. And I realized we're stuck with it for the whole show. And then we got a gift from God. The monkey caught fire.
Is everything all right in there?
No.
What happened? Did he bang it on something?
Yep.
All right, well, that happens. This is experimental television, ladies and gentlemen. One day, this will never happen. The monkey cam will be just as common as the off-on switch.
It was no monkeys were hurt. So we can just enjoy this. But something went wrong with the battery pack, and smoke started pouring out of the monkey right near the half-hour break. And stagehands came out with fire extinguishers and had to put out the monkey. And you had to go, you'd go home, and your friend, how was your day at work? Here? Well, we had to put out the monkey. It was just, I love my job. So it gave us an ending, a coherent ending, and the monkey wasn't hurt. So it was just everything. You just get lucky. So, I mean, the idea was good, and Dave was great. Truly a talented monkey.
When an idea came up, did it have to be sold to the writers as a whole or just to the right people, including Dave? And I guess I think when I think of this question, I think of the show where the show went 360.
Oh, one of mine.
Oh, that was yours?
Yeah, that was mine. I mean, I've never met this man before. Yeah, that was one of mine, another one I'm really, really proud of.
Well, you can probably see what's happening to your television picture here in the studio and at home as well. Ladies and gentlemen, on August 15th, 1932, CBS experimented with a television transmission, and I believe the name of that program was called the Worldwide Review. That was in 1932. Now, since that time, of course, we've had local television all over the country. We have network television. We now have cable television. We have satellite communications. We have color television. We have stereo television. And now, tonight, another experiment, another step forward. Thanks to the technological geniuses at RCA and General Electric, tonight we bring you the 360-degree image rotation television program.
So how did you sell that?
You didn't sell it, really. Here is our procedure, that you wrote your idea about one page. One page absolutely tops. It would never run under the second page. Just here's the essence of this idea. This was the 360-degree rotation show. Here is what I want to do physically. Just in the course of the hour, the image rotates once. And so about 20 minutes in, it's going to get really annoying to watch. Here's why I think this is going to work. You know, it's about pseudo-technological innovations. That's an aesthetic line that the show really seems to do well with. It's about making a big deal about a small thing. Then you elaborate just a little bit about what some of the details will be. We want teams of lab-coated scientists standing by to present this. Here's what might happen at 15 minutes. Here's some business Dave might do at the half hour. You know, we've achieved inversion. You know, and there's a big applause, music. But a one-page kind of outline of the piece, what it's about and how you'll do it. And you walk that down the hall and put it on the head writer's desk. And my whole time there, that was Steve O'Donnell. At the end of the working day, Steve has this big stack of pieces that the writers have dropped on his desk all day long. And he kind of shuffles that stack and puts it in order. And it is he who is going to go in and pitch those ideas to Dave at the end, just the two of them in a room. You're not there to sell your piece, and you're not there to hear Dave roll his eyes and explain why your piece isn't funny at all and why he'll never be doing it. I think this is a great system in that it was important that Dave get to speak freely about what he'd do in the show and what he thought was funny and what he thought wasn't. But writers, or at least I, am really, really sensitive, and you don't want to be beaten down constantly. And the rejection rate's about 90%. So to have those two guys, both of whom are really funny and really smart and I think are great at their jobs, to have them doing that together, I thought that was a great system.
I have to admit, I certainly have made this clear, I think, throughout the show today, that I think it's going to be a really sad day. I mean, just the idea of this institution in television leaving and not being with us. I mean, obviously, the man deserves to retire without a doubt.
He doesn't. What about my needs? You know, I just think he's unbelievably great at his job at a time when, look around. I mean, the country's what? We're number 32 in pretty much everything except for late night talk shows, thanks to Dave. And again and again and again, I got to do pieces I never conceivably could have done anywhere else. And it was because of him. I mean, to be given this opportunity to do work you're proud of and to be made to feel your work is valued, what a dream. I don't like to gush too much because we all get to complain about our boss. And, you know, he rejected a lot of pieces of mine that he shouldn't have. Finally, why people watched, I think, is Dave's sensibility. You get to see the world the way Dave does. And that's what our pieces were supposed to do, to kind of put Dave at his most Dave-like, to be an expression of that sensibility. But then the longer he's on the air, the more familiar that becomes. So you think, oh, well, maybe he'll last 10 years, you know, and that's amazing. And that's like, what is it, 45 years later, 65 years later? The guy's like 102. He can barely walk out on stage. And everyone knows his sensibility, and it's still funny. It's amazing. No, he shouldn't get to retire. He should be. It's like the way that we keep, you know, these poor kids in the National Guard, where they keep, you know, send them to Iraq again. You know, Dave should have to keep serving.
Will you be watching tonight? Will you be watching the final show?
Yeah, I mean, sure, that's an event. But I think it's like a lot of jobs. Like once you leave, you can't really go back. You know, you're like a ghost. You're like, you're so involved in it. You're thinking about it all the time. You're thinking about it when you're at work. You're thinking about it when you're at home. And you count yourself lucky to be so immersed in it. But when I left, that was it. I now and then it's on. And I check in to go, well, I bet it's really crumbled without me. And you go, gee, no, it's actually quite good.
What are you proudest of when it comes to your work on the show?
I'm proud. I mean, I really, really felt great about Monkey Cam. I think if I'm a footnote to TV history, it's that. It's this tiny little footnote to a footnote. I felt great about the 360-degree rotation show. I felt great about Late Night in Tokyo. Just every detail was just so. Oh, there was one called, this shouldn't be, you know, Randy's Greatest Hits, but well, yes, maybe it should. There was a show where, this was the idea that you take a rerun, you transcribe it. You know, you write out every single word, every stammer, every pause, everything that is uttered on that show. Then you get new actors and skilled dubbing actors, and they add they redo the audio, just the audio on that show with different voices, and they're not wacky voices. It was an actor named, I believe it was an actor we used, Larry Pine, a terrific New York stage actor. He was Dave. He has a lovely voice. He sounds like a host.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. My name is Dave Letterman. I'm not a comedian, but I play one on TV.
Here's what was great about working there is that it took a lot of time to do this. It was very precise, and the producer said, oh, we should put a lot of ads and we should promote this, we should make a big fuss about this. And Dave knew that we shouldn't, that you just put it on like another show. And that give the viewer, Dave respected the viewer. Give the viewer the thrill of discovering that. That's half the fun. Don't take that away from. Trust that the viewer will get it and will enjoy it. And I should say, when it ran, it had the highest number of complaining phone calls any episode of our show ever got. A record that would not be broken until the following year by me with the 360-degree rotation show, which topped it. And what was fascinating about this for me, what made me so proud to work there, is, you know, we had, it was Nielsen ratings then. And so you knew in these like 5-minute intervals how many people were watching the show. And so you could chart that against complaining phone calls. And as the number of complaining phone calls increased, the viewership did not drop. They hated it and they couldn't stop watching it. Well, why wouldn't I be proud?
And great creativity, amazing creativity.
And really fun, really, really fun.
Randy Cohen was a longtime Emmy Award-winning writer for Late Night with David Letterman. He is also the host and creator of Person, Place, Thing, heard right here on WAMC. Randy, it's always a blast talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.